Down. So, oh, now things are being recorded according to the helpful pop-up that I just got. So, it's great to have everybody here today. So, just as a reminder, my name is Michael Littman. I'm the Division Director for Information and Intelligence Systems at the NSF. And I went recently to the AAAI conference, and we presented there, we were engaged in a session where we were talking about shared infrastructure for AI research. And what I learned is that not a lot of people knew about the National AI Research Resource, or the NAIR. And we decided maybe it would be helpful to kind of get the word out a little bit better. So what we decided to do today is invite to the office hours Katie Antipas, who is the director of the Office of Advanced Cyber Infrastructure at NSF. This is a roughly a sibling unit to IIS. And traditionally, her organization has been providing computing resources to scientists across disciplines. So folks like chemists and physicists and geologists and stuff like that. And it's now becoming clear that computer scientists need some help with that too. And so Katie was tasked with basically spearheading this notion of a national AI research resource pilot as part of the executive order on AI. And so she's now given, I think, if I have the count correct, 611 of these talks to different sub-communities that just need to know about what's going on, what the efforts are so far, where we are, and where we're going. And so I'm delighted to give Katie a 612th chance to talk about this. So let me turn it over to Katie, and we'll just take it from there.
Okay, thank you so much, Michael. And I'm so excited to be here just to talk with you all and answer questions. You are really a key audience for the NAIR pilot, hopefully a user and a participant. And we've been working really closely with Wendy and Michael on the launch and deployment of this pilot. What I have here today is I did put in a few slides just to set the context for everyone. Possibly you've heard our larger webinar. I'm not going to cover everything, but I did want to just put in provide you a little bit of background. And then we really want the rest of the time to be open Q&A. What are you thinking of? What are you hearing? What do you need? And we want to make it very clear this is a pilot, and the pilot is really needs community input. And we're going to all learn as we go. So with that, let me just go forward with a couple slides here. Again, not too many, just so we can get some background. So I just want to start and level set with everyone with the vision for the NAIR. Okay, the vision for the NAIR, the National AI Research Resource, is a national infrastructure that connects the research community, the research and education community, to the necessary computing, data sets, training materials, models, software, and user support necessary to really power AI innovation. I'm sure you've seen many of your colleagues or collaborators have moved to industry. We want to make sure that the research community, that you all have the resources that you need to really thrive in this AI field. So the number of key goals that were articulated as part of the vision for the NAIR really are to spur innovation, increase the diversity of talent in AI, improve overall capacity for AI R&D, and to advance a responsible or trustworthy environment. To this particular group, I think you probably understand why an architecture or an infrastructure like the NAIR is needed. These resources that the community needs have become increasingly concentrated. They're expensive. They can be hard to use, and they can be available to only the most well-resourced institutes or the large technology companies. And so the NAIR vision is really a first step towards bridging that gap into providing those researchers that are investigating AI for the public good to have access to resources, and also to make sure that our next generation of researchers have access for in their education to test and train these models, get their hands on resources. Okay, so I want to pause here because there is the vision for the full NAIR. This is articulated in a task force report. It's a big vision. It's a vision for a $2.6 billion initiative over 6 years. This is what was articulated in this report. I will note that no funding has yet been appropriated, okay? But the vision is a large national scale infrastructure. Where we are today is that we were in NSF directed with our along with our partners to contribute in-kind resources our existing resources as well as in-kind contributions from the private sector and nonprofits to launch a pilot for the NAIR. So the pilot's going to be limited in scale. Okay, we want to demonstrate the potential impact of the concept of the NAIR, want to reach new communities, support some amazing research, and then really as a community gain some experience of what we might need, what are some lessons learned, some technical designs that we need to build a larger NAIR in the future. All right, so we launched this pilot on January 24th with 10 other agency partners and 25 non-governmental partners. And you can go to nairpilot.org, that website. It's our lean portal at this time. And there were three initial opportunities that were open. The first, there's a survey for researchers and educators to try to understand what are your potential use cases for the NAIR. We would love to hear from you. We want to hear from you. Okay. The survey actually closes soon. It closes, is it tomorrow? I think it closes tomorrow. Hopefully you've heard of it. It would be great if you can take a snapshot of that QR code and fill it out for us. We also had our first opportunity for the research community to apply for computing resources. This actually just closed on March, and the demand was overwhelming, right? We had 150 submissions in just 5 weeks. So it's very clear that the demand is out there, and that's part of the reason, of course, we're building the pilot. There's also a number of other pilot resources, some data sets that are online from government agencies, as well as some training opportunities. A key point to make for you here is that a second open opportunity is coming in April. And that second opportunity will include access to, I think I have it here, access to cloud computing resources. This includes access to a more diverse set of kind of the agency supercomputing resources. It also will include access and credits for closed model access, such as those from Anthropic or OpenAI, as well as collaboration opportunities. Because the demand is so large, we've kind of scoped the initial themes really just to have a bit of a filter to prioritize some of the requests that come in. Those are around safe, secure, and trustworthy AI, human health, environment, infrastructure research, and AI education. And you'll see more details in the open opportunity calls. So what we're moving towards here is there's a set of researchers. These are US-based researchers. They access these resources through a portal, nairpilot.org, and they get access to the set of resources. Some you have to apply to because there's an unlimited amount. Some are open. Okay. Some are open, like data sets. Compute is something you have to apply to. We've also organized the pilot around some key thrust areas. So one is NAIR Open, which I've been talking a lot about, which is really connecting the research community to these open computational and data resources. Another is thrust area is NAIR Secure. So the Department of Energy and NIH are leading that effort. And so what that means is if you have research or data sets that require a higher level of security or privacy preserving methods that need to be taken into account, we do have some enclaves that you can use. NAIR Software, this is a thrust area that will really be forward-looking, thinking about how can we make this more of kind of a coherent platform. Right now, by necessity, I call it a bit of a potpourri, right? If you are on an Azure a system, you're going to have that software stack. If you are accessing an NSF supercomputer, you'll have that software stack. But going forward in the future, we can imagine, and it's articulated in the NAIR task force report, a NAIR software stack or a NAIR container. And so this thrust area will be thinking about that. Finally, there's a NAIR classroom thrust area. And this is really in response to I think it's really an urgent need to be able to give students hands-on access to models for classroom projects that they may be doing. And so we've heard from many, many institutions that, just finding those computing resources for their introductory to machine learning class can be incredibly challenging, even at the most well-resourced universities. I'll note, we cannot do this without the community. This field is moving way, way too fast. And so we'll be having a number of workshops to really launch this community design process. And really, that's what the pilot is all about. We don't have all the answers. And in many cases, I think we don't even have the questions yet. Okay, when I go out to the community, I say, I've heard, Katie, you're talking a lot about compute. What about the data? The data is a huge challenge as well. And we absolutely know that is the case. And here are some of the key challenges that we see. And for the pilot, we're going to have to, really target some of the different areas that we look into here. The pilot is not intended to, be the full vision of the NAIR, but we want to investigate a number of these different areas with the community. Finally, I think I mentioned this with NAIR Classroom, but there's been so much interest in NAIR Classroom. I think we put in our email list, we have NAIR_pilot@nsf.gov. A huge majority of the questions that are coming in are really around NAIR Classroom and how can individual universities get involved. And so we're working on our strategy here, and I would just say stay tuned. We'll hopefully have something out fairly soon on this. And so really what's been next after the launch? We have a ton of work to do, outreach to the community that needs to happen. As I mentioned, we're going to be having a set of community meetings and technical workshops. We're also building the governance structure too. I mean, we have 25 non-governmental partners and 10 agencies we're working with. So there's a lot of work there. We're integrating partner resources for this next open opportunity. And then we also have to build out our user support capabilities because we want the research community that comes to have a good experience working on these platforms. So then finally, as I think I for the Q&A portion, I would love to, I'm going to stop on this page that has the big QR code. So hopefully you can fill out our survey. It came out as a Dear Colleagues letter about five or six weeks ago. And again, the survey closes tomorrow. So we would love if you could fill this out and get your friends and neighbors involved as well. So
and just with to be clear, the link is, you don't have to do the QR code if you're not that kind of person. The link okay. is in the chat.
The link is in there too. So maybe I'll keep this up, but I really wanted to keep it brief since I know it's just more helpful, I think, to have a lot of Q&A. So please, Wendy, you want to serve me up with questions? And we have other members from our
team. I think maybe Wendy and Catherine will serve me, and then I'll pass things along to you.
Oh,
and
perfect.
Just to kick things off, I was wondering, I mean, just listening to kind of the way that you were presenting this, how unique of a thing is this? Like, have there been efforts like this in the past? Are there kind of analogs that you can point to that say, yeah, these are communities that have done this sort of thing. This is how it worked out in the past. Like, how are you thinking about this?
Yeah, sure. So I will say that we have a long history in NSF supporting the research community on advanced computing and data platforms, supercomputing resources. I think most of the time these have been targeted towards the domain sciences, tons of physicists and chemists, biologists, geologists, use these resources. And clearly the computing sciences and AI research community has seen a huge increase in the resources. We absolutely have some of the communities on our platforms today, but we need to do a lot more outreach. So that's one, is there is a baseline kind of know-how how to support the science community. But secondly, I want to point to the COVID-19 HPC High Performance Computing Consortium. This was a public-private partnership during the pandemic that brought together resources from cloud computing providers, as well as our agency supercomputers, to very quickly provide resources to researchers that were investigating COVID-19 and needed computational resources. And so we're using some of that know-how to launch the pilot. What I'll note is that, this is too long of an answer, Michael, but what I'll note is that, you know, we really focused on computing access before. And I think what's new for the NAIR is really thinking also about data access and model access as well. And that's, I think, where we need a lot of community input. The compute, we have a pretty good sense about how to federate that, but the software for AI, the data sets, models, that's going to be require a lot of discussion.
Awesome. Thanks. I know you guys, your team has really worked hard so far into trying to figure out what sort of issues are going to come up and how to address them. And so it's really great to kind of hear your thinking on this. One of the questions in the chat has been, how is NAIR different from existing programs for research infrastructure? So can you kind of articulate the distinction there?
Right. A couple ways. So I think I would say the vision for the NAIR is much larger. The vision is sort of more of an integrated platform. We are right now using some of our existing platforms. So one question I had is, well, should I apply to Access or should I apply to NAIR? And the answer right now is the NAIR calls are fairly targeted on certain topical areas. So that's one. The second is right now, the first call was computationally focused, but the resources that will be available in the NAIR pilot in this next April call will include access to models, so API credits for OpenAI resources, for example, or partnerships with Anthropic. And so there's other collaboration opportunities as well. So it's a more diverse set of resources that will be available than just compute.
Thanks. So I actually interpreted the question a little bit differently. So let me see if I can prompt you in a slightly different direction, or maybe just cover this. So NSF offers programs for research infrastructure. And typically what that means is we would like the community to tell us what research resources you're going to provide for the community. Right? Does that make sense? So some people submit proposals where they say, we want to build a telescope for the, let's say, the astronomy community, because I don't think the computer scientists need that quite so much. But they propose that they're going to build and provide this piece of research infrastructure. So a lot of NSF programs that are focused that mention research infrastructure, it's about, you know, us helping you provide those. The NAIR is not that. The NAIR is we're providing a research piece of infrastructure to the community. And so when you apply for using the NAIR, you're actually applying to use the NAIR for the research that you do. Does that make sense?
That's correct. But I would say we are providing the infrastructure. Those opportunities will get, in the vision for the full NAIR, will get bid out. There would be solicitations around that. So if that makes sense. So in the vision for the full NAIR, there is funding for resource providers. So members in the community, and this is how they people in the Office of Advanced Cyber Infrastructure Community, they bid on our solicitations to build a supercomputer for the research community. Here we've been talking about how do you be a user of the NAIR. Does that help?
Yeah, no, that clarified for me. Thanks.
And I would just say anyone in OAC that is on, you hopefully have microphone access and you can jump in as well.
Right. Just to point out to folks in case you don't know this, Katie brought some of her team along for this presentation. So we've got a deep bench of very knowledgeable and expert people to make sure that these questions get answered correctly. Yeah. Or in the most useful possible way. Let's say that. We're always interested in correct answers. All right. So another question from the chat is, when submitting a proposal, do we need to specify one source provider, or can we list several preferred providers and let the providers decide who might be interested to support the proposed research?
Oh, great question. I actually even like the latter better. So you do not have to, I'm going to let Sharon answer it. You don't have to specify if you don't know, and or if you don't care, if you don't have a preference. And so Sharon, I saw you turn your camera on. Sharon is in this daily and is our lead on this. So go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Katie. You do not have to specify which resource you would like from the list of resources that are possibilities. We actually have a checkbox for you to say, I don't know which resource I want, choose for me. The other possibility is to choose more than one resource, but to indicate that you would in your submission to indicate that you would like to just be matched with whatever the best resource is. And in any case, every submission, every request is going to go through a matching process. So if you get it wrong and ask for a resource that isn't suited for your request, then it will still be available to be matched to one of the resources that it does meet. Or it does match best with.
Yeah, and maybe I can also note, just because you request a particular resources doesn't guarantee you will get it, because there's a capacity limit on each of those resources. So we will do our best to match, the matching process will match you to the best available resource.
But all right. Another question, are there other resources that you all, including Katie, might recommend that I access to ensure that I stay on top of what you all are doing with the NAIR pilot? So I guess, how do you stay up to date with news and information about what's going on?
Oh, this feels like I was just handed a softball to hit. So you can subscribe to our mailing list. It's like kind of an old school mailing list. I'm sure Bill is putting it in the chat as we speak. So that is. The best way to stay, Bill, give me a thumbs up, stay in tune. And, you know, larger announcements, we will, we'll echo out through the typical and appropriate channels, whether it's a DCL or other means. And Bill, you're welcome to jump in if there's any more there.
All right. Next question uses an acronym that I'm unfamiliar with. So let me try to look it up real fast and make sure it's actually relevant. Oh, of course. That makes a ton of sense. All right. Person asks, I have been working with OSDF, which I now know is the Open Science Data Federation, on integrating our big data for AI. Is there an effort or opportunity to integrate OSDF data origins and caches with NAIR?
So I think that is absolutely something we're looking into right now. Making sure that the data sets are close to the necessary computing resources is a really key priority. I would actually, I don't know whoever wrote that. I think if you write us at NAIR_pilot.nsf.gov, I'd love to understand kind of your particular use case, but we certainly are looking at the kind of the data layer now. I would say we needed to get something out quickly. We had an executive order that, you know, directed us in 90 days. And so we moved really quickly on the compute. And I think now we're moving on some of those other fronts, which include data and software. But great question.
All right. I really like this next question because it gets into a whole bunch of stuff that I guess I haven't heard you talk about as much, but I know that you've thought about it. It seems you are seeing AI researchers, and I'm going to take you to mean like all of us at NSF and the other folks who are involved in the NAIR. It seems you're seeing AI researchers only as consumers, but not as contributors. Community input through surveys and design workshops is good, but it seems to me it would be useful to consider how the AI community could slash should be part of the development of the NAIR. This is not clear from the messaging. I also think that using AI to create a new generation of infrastructure should be central to NAIR and a broader benefit for all sciences.
Yeah, great, great question. So we've heard many folks want to contribute to contribute data sets to the pilot. So one, I'll say we have an internal working group that is working on a kind of process for how to accept and those data sets. You know, what is the process and the criteria? I would say, you know, I would say stay tuned. We had to launch very quickly, and we absolutely have the intention to have contributions from the community. It takes a little while, as you know, to get the wheels in motion. Maybe I can talk about the grand vision for the NAIR. Is that I'm going to put this slide back up. I think it's important to note this here. I think it's important to note, what is this operating entity here? This operating entity is envisioned to be a non-governmental operating entity that is running the day-to-day operations of the NAIR. So the longer term vision is that this would be bid out to the community running the day-to-day operations and the strategy for the NAIR. And so this wouldn't be an NSF, how do I say, NSF would be the, you know, we are the funding agency, but a competitive process would kind of select this operating entity. We're at a stage right now where we're just working, we have really early working groups. So I would love to, you know, have whoever submitted that fill out kind of the survey and tell us a little bit more. We're moving really quickly here, but absolutely, you know, intend this to be community design and have community input into different elements of the NAIR, absolutely. I don't know if other people from OAC want to weigh in on that, but that is definitely our direction, and we're just barely out of the starting gate is what I would say right now.
Yeah, I don't know if other people want to chime in, but I did. So, okay, so I heard you say there's the opportunity for people to contribute, for example, data. I think the question maybe was about contributing to the actual design and maybe even the implementation. And in particular, the little plug at the end was, what role could AI play in helping to make just cyber infrastructure better generally? And should that be a part of the NAIR mission explicitly, or is that something even that the NAIR would support at all?
Oh, that's kind of interesting. Yeah, no, I think we're open to all ideas right now. You know, I would say Bill Miller reminds me often, right, that the F in the National Science Foundation is a foundation. And so our goal is to get opportunities out to the community in this regard. And so I think we're just at a really early stage, but we absolutely expect the community would be part and critical to the design.
So people doing research on things like how to use AI for cyber infrastructure, where do they even get traction? Is there a research conference that does that? Do you know? I mean, I'm asking partly because I do feel like the question sort of falls in the cracks between the two of us. And there might be other folks on the webinar who've thought about this. I know Yolanda Gill is here. But the role, yeah, the role that AI can play, and you know, presumably you don't want to just start off saying, oh, you've got this crazy new AI algorithm. Sure, we'll put it, we'll use it to do all the allocations on the infrastructure. That would probably be a mistake. But presumably there's some kind of buildup of results through a research process that could eventually get incorporated into the infrastructure itself.
Yeah, no, this is really interesting. And I mean, I think part of what we are finding is that you know, OAC and IIS have started to work a lot more closely through the NAIR than we perhaps haven't had in the past. And I think this is a potential gap that we need to address. I don't have a good answer for you right now. I know people at the, you know, that are working on high performance computing systems are incorporating AI more and more into their operations, right? Whether it's managing the temperature of the systems and the facilities to the scheduling. So I know that research is there are you know, already underway, and I can imagine with the NAIR that something at this scale would be even more important.
Awesome, thanks. All right, another question. I feel like another softball. I feel like I've heard you answer this question before. Are the resources limited to STEM? Will people outside STEM get involved?
Yeah, great question. So the research area, the full vision of the NAIR is that you can support the research and education community, not only in core AI research, but also in research from the domain sciences or social sciences that are applying AI or using AI. So that is in scope to the big, for the full vision of the NAIR. I will note that the because we're in a pilot stage, we don't have a ton of resources right now. The initial scoped calls have been focused on STEM areas. So kind of two parts to that question. Yes, for the greater vision, support a really wide range of science areas. Initially, while we have a number of limited resources, those first areas are STEM related.
And certainly areas like one of the early priorities for the NAIR is trustworthy, responsible, ethical AI. And there's definitely people kind of outside the traditional STEM disciplines that have contributions to make there. So presumably they would be welcome in some form, right? It has to be the case that it's clear what the research is being proposed to do, right? That people need these resources and they're going to do some relevant research, but they don't have to be STEM people per se. That said, I think I guess, Katie, as you're pointing out, that the goal is not to say, okay, well, you need computing resources, you're not doing AI, you're not in STEM. Like, that's not what this is designed for. It really is supposed to be an AI research resource. And so if you're a non-STEM person who's doing AI research and needs the resources, then it seems like it would be in scope.
Yeah, then you're absolutely in scope.
All right. As I understand it, we only had one other question, and I think Bill just posted saying that it was already answered through the Q&A. So maybe I'll ask a question in case other people need a minute or two to think of their own questions. That you've done now 612 of these presentations. What's a great question that you've gotten that we didn't think to ask? Like, has there been any particularly really interesting, exciting insights that people have had that you feel like, oh yeah, that's actually really important?
Well, it's like, I'm going to give myself a hard question.
you can ask it of me if you don't want to answer it. I'm just curious as to what the question is.
Yeah. I mean, I think the questions are, how is the pilot going to enable the support of trustworthy AI, right? So that's a question that, one, the research areas that we're focusing on are in that theme. But there's another question there, which is, what policies does the infrastructure, the pilot need to take? Should users have to go to have to take a training? How do we accept a data set into the pilot or a model? What's our process if something is found in that model that is you know, illegal? Like, what are all these processes? And I think really bringing the community together around these questions is something we want to do in the pilot. You know, some these are new questions, so that's a question nobody asked. It's also a harder question for me to answer because we don't. That's part of the process of the pilot is figuring some of these things out and learning what would work and what wouldn't. Maybe you want to answer the
trust. Yeah, no, that I really like your answer. I would add. So when I think about what it means to do trustworthy AI research at the moment, like in the beginning, when people started using the phrase, I scoffed because I'm like, what were we doing before? We were not doing untrustworthy AI research. But the idea of trustworthy AI research is to try to understand how do we understand what these systems are doing and how do we make sure that they do more of what we want and less of what we don't want. And my sense is that the biggest issue there is that we've been exploring as a research field lately, we've been trying to explore the ramifications of scale. Like what happens when you make these models really, really big and you put lots of data in, more data than any individual human being and possibly any group of human beings of reasonable size could vet, right? So we're putting all kinds of things in these models and then we don't really understand the size of the scope of the models. The only way to answer those kinds of research questions is to be able to do work at scale. Right. You don't actually answer the question if you do it on your laptop because, well, you might get lucky. And it might be that there's some fundamental principle that you can actually explore locally. But my sense is that a lot of the real questions involve understanding what these models are doing at scale. And individual researchers haven't had the opportunity to do that. So I don't know how to do this without the NAIR. So and how is NAIR supporting it? Well, NAIR is making it possible for people to look at these models at scale, or at least that's the vision. That's, I don't know, that's how I think about it anyway. All right, speaking of scale. So sometimes I think to myself, this is maybe too hard of a question, but it is something that's been on my mind. If this works the way we hope it works, which is to say it really provides a way for people to do the cutting edge AI research that society needs and that we need to understand, and suddenly, and we have a very big AI research community these days because not only do we have more people studying AI explicitly, but more people who are studying other topics. It now includes AI, right? You can be a geologist and be like an AI researcher who's studying the use of AI in geology. So we've got this explosion of a community size and also the needs per community person. How will this possibly ever scale? Right? Like if this, how would this not collapse under its own success?
So I think right now, right, we are on a huge curve, right, which is exploding in terms of the requirements from the research community. I think we can't underestimate the impact of providing, you know, starting this effort. And so I think it's critical that we start and we show and demonstrate the potential and the need and the value. I think the largest models that are trained will probably still have to happen on our biggest supercomputers or in partnership with industry. And so I think we have to think as a community, you know, how, you know, what tools do need to be trained at the larger scale, and then what can be reused or refined by other members of the community. I think we also, right, we need to keep pushing on basic research into the methods that might help bend the curve, basic research into the systems and the technologies and the processors that would allow us to, you know, long-term bend the curve in terms of energy efficient architectures. So it's clearly a big challenge. I think what we want to do is take a first step and begin to show the impact that the research community can have. And right now, you know, it's really hard for researchers to even get these access to these resources. So I think it's a good question. I think we got to step forward and start to wade into these waters, and you know, we'll learn as we go.
Yeah, I like that answer a lot. Well, the head of the SIZE directorate who hired both me and Katie, I think I asked her a question like this once because this was pre-NAIR, but during the CloudBank era, and She's like, you should get more AI people to use CloudBank because they need the resources and we have the resources. And I said, well, what if everybody uses the resources? Then they're all going to get used up. She's like, that's a different problem that we could probably, you know, that we can work on solving then. But at the moment, we're not in that regime. And so I feel like it's a similar thing, except for kind of another order of magnitude up. All right. Well, this gave a bunch of other people a chance to ask some good questions. So the next question is, would there be future opportunities to support a longer time project? It seems the first call supports research for 6 months, while some research, for example, new foundation model building, may take longer.
Thanks for that. Thank you. We will take that. Part of the 6 months was driven by one of the resources is getting retired. But Sharon, do you want to say anything more about that?
Sorry, unmuting is hard. Okay. We are going to continue as we add in resources, we're going to continue to see what makes sense. We are aware and we have heard from the community that 6 months may not be enough time to get something up and running. So as Katie mentioned, the decision for these 6 months was first of all because it was the first call and we wanted to learn from it, but also because of a specific resource. One of the things we'll look at is possibly rolling in resources, which would make it possible to do longer amounts of time for an allocation without having to be constrained by any specific resource.
Yeah, I'll also note what is pretty typical on agency systems now is like renewals. So lots of projects, you know, will have been users of our systems for like decades, but they send in kind of an annual review. But we renewal. But we'll take that question. I think it's a good one. Bill, you have your hand up.
Yeah, that's a great question. We have actually discussed this a lot, as Sharon was alluding to. We have to also remember that this is a pilot, and you know we've envisioned a two-year activity in which we're trying to do things that are new, all of the things that Katie laid out. You know, in anticipation of the potential for a real full-scale NAIR, should Congress decide that it would like to provide funding for that. But since AI is so important, and we also mentioned that we have the regular way of the research community coming in to ask for computing resources through what we call Access, if you're familiar with that. Actually, Sharon is the Cognizant Program Officer, so she's here with us. But that also allows funding of, I mean, there are AI projects through Access on that. And those are typically longer, right, Sharon? It's a year-long allocation, right? So just be aware that there's also that pathway. If you're thinking or you're needing a longer-term project than what you might see through the pilot for whatever reason, then you know that avenue is available to you.
I'm going to do the next question slightly out of order because I feel like it connects with what we're just talking about. If everything works perfectly, what do you expect to see in 5 years?
Okay. So as Bill said, the pilot is scoped for right now 2 years. I mean, ideally we show, you know, what are the outcomes we're looking for in a pilot? So I'm going to go shorter in 2 years. We would like to pilot reaching and demonstrating we can reach new communities. Clearly, we're not going to reach all new communities, but can we show, hey, we can go into certain regions of the country or certain types of institutions and really get some new users? We also want to, I think, highlight some of the amazing science work and research that might not otherwise have happened if the NAIR was NAIR pilot had not started, and also get some of these lessons learned from the community. If it was 5 years, I would hope that we certainly had demonstrated that and that we would be moving on the full NAIR by that point. But that gets into the hands of I think what Congress would do. But I think our job right now is to to demonstrate that this two-year pilot is really needed by the research community, and that we want to make sure what is being created and built has the fingerprints on from the research community, and that it is something that's you know, popular and useful to the community. And the only way that we can do that is with community participation.
Awesome. Thanks. All right. A couple more questions that actually cover some missing holes in the space that we hadn't actually talked about so much. One is how to make NAIR more accessible to students for education purpose?
Great question. We are working hard on this right now. I think one thing we really want to do is pilot bringing resources to, you know, some classrooms, so that instructors, lecturers, professors can use NAIR resources in their classrooms. I think we know that to get started, even the most advanced users, right? You might just start with a Jupyter-like notebook. And so if we can provide, you know, that simple resource that includes a software and all included software and hardware environment, I think that's one way we could go forward. I will note the scope of the NAIR, you know, we're the Office of Advanced Cyber Infrastructure. We provide that infrastructure to classrooms, but we're working with IIS and CNS, the other parts of SISE, to think more about how you could couple a curriculum to those classrooms that, you know, they may not have a lecturer or that has been trained in some of these areas. I think we do have a couple opportunities out, right? There's the Educate AI DCL that I think is closing pretty soon. There's a tie-in there to the NAIR pilot. So there are some opportunities that are open in this space currently.
All right, great. I've got, what do I want to do next? There's two questions about data. It would be great if we could do those together. But here's I'm going to focus on those. All right. So one is, in astronomy, we have multiple federal funding agencies, for example, NSF, NASA, NCAR, each with siloed data archives and access patterns and capabilities. Would you consider proposals that seek to use NAIR as a lever to address these important data silos?
Great. So, Bill, can you answer that one?
Yeah, I was just typing the answer, but it wasn't fast enough. Yeah, it's a great question. Actually, that is absolutely in the vein of what we're doing. We're actually doing that in two ways. One, we have a separate investment called the National Discovery Cloud for Climate. Our colleague Marlon Pierce in OAC is coordinating that, and it involves a number of awards that were made in 2023, and also may involve awards this year that actually tie in a number of those resources and look for developing pathways from data to compute and so on in that space. And that is serving as one of the demonstration aspects of the NAIR pilot. So for those parts of the National Discovery Cloud for Climate that are involved in AI, that's incorporated. In addition, we have partners to the NAIR pilot itself, like NASA, like NOAA, who have those kinds of data sets. And they have contributed those data sets as part of some of the data sets, AI-ready data sets, as part of the pilot, but are also working with us sort of one-on-one to think about the workflow pathways that make those data much more accessible and usable in the AI context. So that is definitely part of the NAIR. Right now, we're not seeking other proposals per se for projects, but stay tuned.
Would it be appropriate for people to submit proposals to OAC for that kind of stuff?
Well, we have the CSSI program. It's a software and data infrastructure program, and we haven't specifically called for NAIR proposals for that. But that said, although NAIR is specifically about AI, the underlying plumbing, the data infrastructure, the storage, compute, all that, the usage pathways for that part of what OAC funds. So if at some point we point for specific proposals for NAIR infrastructure, you will definitely know. I should turn it back to Katie on that final answer because she leads our group.
I think that's a good answer. So we have some opportunities that are up right now that people could apply to. As Bill said, they're not specifically NAIR, but they're in the general space of supporting data and software infrastructure.
All right, cool. Related question on the data side of the NAIR. Are there any official efforts that we are making as a community toward archiving the ever-growing list of large language models or enormous data sets they are trained on? I have bought some external drives to download data sets that some generative models are trained on and model weights, but are there existing resources within the NSF duplicating my personal efforts?
I haven't heard of anyone duplicating your efforts. Michael, I don't know if you know if there is any effort in the...
I mean, there are tons of websites where people say, look, here's the language models that I'm familiar with and various properties of them. Some of them list, for example, how open they were, because in many cases, the data, the text that they're trained on is just not known, right? We just don't, it's just information that's not shared. And I don't know, resources like Hugging Face, where there's just lots of models are actually archived in one place. Yeah, to the extent that they exist, that's what I'm aware of. But I mean, yeah. I've heard you say, oh, sorry, was that you, Bill?
I was actually just going to follow up, Michael. I think Hugging Face was a good reference. We're not here to advertise commercial things at all, but the NAIR involves a lot of in-kind contributions from a huge array of partners. We have 25 partners and counting now. They're all listed on the NSF website with what they're giving. And it just came to mind that Hugging Face is one exemplar of a place where you could go for both data and models, and they are part of the NAIR pilot making contributions. So we just encourage people to take a look at, we should put in the website to the link. The NSF website has an expandable set, a list of the partners who have actually signed agreements and who are engaging on the pilot. And their contributions do include things like data and model resources.
Well, one thing that's really helpful. One thing I've heard Katie say in some of these presentations is that discoverability is actually part of the goal of the NAIR. It's not necessarily creating the data sets, but to the extent that they exist, making it easier for researchers to have like a kind of a one-stop shop for finding them. This seems relevant to that.
Right. And so, you know, I think we're very aware that the experts, the domain experts, have to be kind of the ones curating and these data sets. But the role of NAIR as the infrastructure can be to provide kind of the incentives to make these data sets more available, accessible, fair for community reuse. And so with that, it is envisioned that there'd be like a data discovery service. Clearly what we have on the portal right now is not a data discovery service. It's a list of links. And, this is just the stage we are at right now, but that's certainly in the vision for the full NAIR.
All right. So I want to say there's possibly a couple other questions out there, but I encourage you folks to stay engaged with this, ask your questions by email if you need to. I want to let everybody go because I always forget to factor in travel time to whatever your 2 o'clock is or wherever, whatever time zone you're in the hour. But I did want to take just a moment. I don't say it enough, just to thank Katie for her efforts and the whole, and I've said it to Katie before, but not as often as I should, but just her whole team, the folks who came from the OAC squad, and her engaged in this, you know, what you're doing on behalf of the science and research community is just fantastic. And I'm personally very grateful. I'm sure that that many of the AI folks that we've got here are would also like the chance to just say thanks for this effort, and hopefully it'll all turn out well for everybody. So thanks for being here today to share these ideas with us, and thanks for all the work that you put in creating this opportunity in the first place.